Good evening. It's good to be here with you. I was all prepared for a hot building, and I got my jacket off, my tie off, and I was ready. But pleasantly surprised to come here to a cool building. It reminds you of the blessings that we have that we take for granted so many times when a simple thing like that's out and you're sweating. And all the people around the world who don't have AC and are worshiping God and happy about it and singing praises to it. I think it's a good reminder for us when to remind us of the simple blessings of life. Start out with, I want to ask you a question. Say when we left the building here, Norm Webb Sr. usually stands out in the back of the door and greets everyone when he leaves. Say that a man of God instead was there, and he gave you two options. For next year until next summer, you can have one or two things. Option one is going to be the best year of your life. You're going to, if you're not married, you're going to finally find that someone, and she's going to be beautiful and smart and everything you could hope for. If you are married, you're going to have a great marriage, you're going to have great kids, your kids are going to do well, be all-stars. You're going to have that job that you always wanted, or if you have that job, you're going to get a promotion and a raise and everything. You'll even get that six-pack, and it'll just magically be there. Boom. Life will be great the next year. Or option two, you'll go through some hard times. Times won't be as great. But at the end of that, you'll be closer to God than ever before. What do you choose? Just think of that as we go through a lesson tonight. If you'll turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 21, that'll be our main text for today. We'll be looking at David's life once again. I took a break for a few weeks, but happy to jump back into David's life once again. But I want to start with this scripture from James. James chapter 1, verse 2. It says, "Count it all joy, brothers, when you encounter various trials." Now, this verse has perplexed me for some time, because trials are, from the devil. They're evil, they're bad, you don't want to go through them. I mean, it's awful when you go through them. They're not even fun. How can you count it all joy when you come into various trials? I think in this chapter that we'll be reading, chapter 21 of 1 Samuel, David encountered a trial. And I think we can take some lessons from his experience in life. Chapter 21 of Daniel, of 1 Samuel, starting in verse 1. "Then David came to Nob to Abimelech, the priest, and Abimelech came to meet David trembling and said to him, 'Why are you alone and no one that was with you?' And David said to Ahimelech, the priest, 'The king has charged me with a matter. Let no one know anything of the matter which I had sent you, with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with a young man for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever is on hand.' Then the priest answered David, 'I have no common bread on your hand, but there is a holy bread. If the young men have kept themselves from women,' and David answered the priest, 'Truly women have been kept from us as always when I go out on expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy even when it's an ordinary journey. How much holy today will their vessels be holy?' So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there, but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord to replace by hot bread on the day it is taken. Now a certain man of servants of Saul there was that day detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. Then David said to Ahimelech, 'Then have you not have a spear or sword at hand? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste.' And the priest said, 'The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you struck down the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there is none but that here.' And David said, 'There is none like it. Give it to me.' And David arose and fled that day from Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, 'Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to him another of of him in dances? Saul has struck his thousands and David his tens thousands. Then David took his words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. So he changed his behavior before him and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors and gates and let his spittle run down his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man is mad. Why have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was distressed and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was bitter in the soul gathered to him and became the commander over him. And there was with him about 400 men. There are a few things, interesting things that I would like to point out to you in this chapter that we read. First off, this is not normal David. The normal David that we've read about. There's a few questionable instances a few deeds that David did. First off, he completely lies to the priest. He was not on a matter for the king's business. That was a complete lie, utter fabrication. He was running from his life, in fact, from Saul. Two, he ate the holy bread, which is unlawful according to the law that only the priest and the sanctuary were supposed to eat of. But he ate of it anyway, even though the priest gave it to him. Third, he was greatly afraid of Achish, the king of Gath, which is very unlike him. You think of David, this great warrior, somebody who's not fearful of anything, someone who faced Goliath with God on his side and was not fearful at all. And then finally, he acts like a madman at the end and is deceiving and deception to save his own life. These things aren't sins, but they're questionable instances. It doesn't sound like the David that we've read about before. And you can even see he's not in the quite right mind, because when he asks for a weapon in verse 8, then Ahimelech said, "There's none but Goliath's sword, and there's none like it." Well, where's Goliath from? He's from Gath. Where does David go? He goes to Gath. So you're taking the Philistine, the champion of the Philistines' sword, who you killed, to his hometown. That doesn't sound like the smartest idea to me. But he does that. He's not really thinking really clearly here, it seems like. But you have to remember that this is a person who lived these real events. And a lot of times we take out stories out of their overall story. We just take a little bit and piece here. We'll talk about the story of Goliath, the story of him and Bathsheba. And we just take the stories out and we don't cover the entire story. That's why I kind of want to do this series in David. So let me remind you of where David has been. Back in chapter 16, put yourself in David's situation. He's out in the field. He's tending his father's sheep. He's really a no one. He's the youngest of all his brothers. He's probably picked on a lot, like most younger brothers. And all of a sudden, his father calls him in, and there's this old dude sitting there, and he anoints him with oil and says, "You are king of Israel." That hasn't happened to you before. All of a sudden, you know, I get a call, I'm the president of the United States. That's a complete shift. Your world turns upside down. And imagine a 16, 17 teenager getting that. On top of that, he's king, but he's not really king. He's still working for his father, and he's got this little side gig with Saul. A spirit comes into him that hurts him, and he gets grumpy. He plays a lyre and settles him down. And so he's working for the guy who is, he's supposed to take the place of, and Saul, the guy he's working for, is not really in his right mind. Has that ever happened to you, maybe? You are underemployed, or you're still sweeping outside, you're still in the cubicle outside, while the head honcho, the boss who you're supposed to be at, is still there, and he's unsettled in your mind. That's got to be a hard place to be in. On top of that, he goes to the battlefield one day, being a gopher, delivering cheese and news of his father, and he's just being a servant, and he goes to expect his troops, basically, because he's king of Israel. His troops, how are we doing? And they're scared, and they're afraid. And David's like, what's going on here? We're supposed to be the leaders of Israel. We're supposed to have God on our side. We're supposed to be fear of none. But they're afraid. And on top of that, his brothers jump on his back and are all over him for it. So he's no support at all. But that doesn't stop him. He's unafraid as he defeats Goliath with no armor whatsoever. And imagine the stress on him as that happened. But what's next is even more terrifying. He becomes famous. If you notice in chapter 17 or 18, verse 7, it says, "And the women sang to one another, and they celebrated. And Saul struck down his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. And Saul was very angry and said, the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed David 10,000, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on." Couple things. David becomes famous. Guys, imagine this. What if you went from a no one to someone every woman in the whole country knows and sing praises to? How would that affect your ego? Were you ever popular in high school or college? And may make some of you uncomfortable. Because if you were popular in high school or college, you didn't always handle that right. Especially probably when it came to women. But this young man has all this fame and is known by everyone. And on top of that, his boss, whose job he's supposed to have, is suspicious of him. How suspicious? He starts shooting things at him and throwing things at him. Have you ever went to work one day and your boss just suddenly starts chunking things at you? Has that ever happened to you? And I'm sure David's, after he's ducked from the spear, not once but twice, and he's just thinking, God, what's going on here? What's happening? And if that's not weird enough, in verse 17 of chapter 18, he says, "Then Saul said to David, 'Here's my elder daughter Merab. I will give to you a wife.'" He goes from trying to kill him to making him his son-in-law. That's not normal. That's not normal. That is a total reverse of what he's done. Have you ever been engaged? Well, I guess most of you have been engaged. Have you ever been engaged and that was broken off at the last minute? This is a crazy day for David. He says, "You're going to be married to Merab." But no, you're not. In fact, she marries someone else on your wedding day. And then then Saul was like, "Okay, you can marry Michal." And David said later on, "Is it a small thing to be the son-in-law of the king? I have no inheritance. I have nothing to give you. A dowry. I have no dowry to give you." And he was like, I only require 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Can you imagine coming out of that room, being one of his best friends, saying, "Hey, what's going on?" And he's like, "Well, I'm not marrying Merab. I'm marrying Michal, and we need to go get 100 foreskins from the Philistines." That's an unusual day. You've never had a day like that. But, and here's what I want after that. I want him to go, and after he marries Michael, and live a happy life. But not long afterwards, Michael looks out the window and sees the army starting to surround the city. He says, "David, you have to go." And here's how I picture this. David is like, "Why? Why do I have to go?" He's like, "They're surrounding the city. They will kill you. But we've only been together for a short time. I don't know. You have to go." And do you think as David was crawling away from the house and going into the night that he looked back and saw his wife crying in the window? But David has a best friend. And a guy can make it through anything if he has a best friend. And Jonathan's always there for him. He goes through it and they have a little system to find out if Saul is really going to kill him or things can be worked out. And they have this little system, you remember that, where it says if the boy, he tells the boy to go fetch Ariel and says go farther, then David has to go away. But if things can be worked out and David come back, he said, he'll tell the boy, the arrow's a little closer, come nearer. As David's hiding those rocks, and he hears him shoot the arrow, what do you think he's wanting to hear? "Come back, boy, it's closer. Come be with your family once again." But instead, he says, "Go farther. You have to leave everything. Your friends, your job, your family." And that brings us to chapter 21. Do you have more sympathy for him now? He's like, I know it's not lawful for me to eat this bread, but I'm hungry. I have no family. I have no friends. I'm about to leave the country. Just this once, can I have bread? Can I just have a break this once? I know I'm not supposed to lie, but I'm fearing for my life. I know I'm only supposed to fear God, but he can kill me. I know I'm not supposed to act mad and be something I'm not. But just this once, can I be someone different? Do you have more sympathy for him? Have you been in that situation where your world is turned upside down and trials of every kind are hitting you from every side and nothing is the same? I know I should go to church, but you have no idea what I've been through. I know I should be friendly and welcome that visitor and be nicer to my kids and my family, and I should have patience and be there for my friends. But the kids are sick. I'm not feeling well. My dad is in the hospital, and things are not going well at work. Can you just give me a break? Have you been there? I think we all have in one short or another. And this is a trial that's going through David's life right now. I want to really quickly go through some things that help us when we reach those points. Things that we, if you're not going through that right now, that we can do now to prevent you from getting there. Or as you go through that trial, can help you through that trial. I know one time, a few weeks ago, Norm Jr. had an illustration of, he was doing, I think, the Wednesday night talk. And he talked about the glass that he had. The preacher had this guy stand up and he had a glass of water. He knocked the water over onto him. He said, "Why did you knock the water onto me?" He says, "I didn't mean to." He specifies, "Why did you knock water onto me? Why was that knocked onto me?" He says, "Because that's what you put in it." Most of our life is spent in, if you make life a 0 to 10, that's the ups and downs of life. The highs are 10s, the very lows are 0s. Normally, we're in the 4 to 7 range. Our average day is probably in the 4 to 7 range. But when we encounter the 8 to 10, where life is really good and we have all this fame and life is great, and when life is horrible and we're acting mad in front of the king of Gath, that's when the water goes over. It's the times that we spend in the 4 to 7 when life's okay, life's not too bad. It's an average day that affects what comes out, whether water or something else. So I want to talk about 5 things that we can do now to prepare us for that. And if you're going through a trial right now, it's 5 things that we can do right now to help you go through that. There's 5 things that happens during a typical trial. 1, trials amplifies sin in your life. When you go through life, if there's any patterns of sin, trials will amplify it and make it bigger. And it's a good time to check your life. Even if it isn't the cause of a trial, it's a good time to check the hood, as it were. Because usually you don't check the hood, you don't check the car, unless it stops working or it starts hiccuping. And it's always a good time to check the hood. 2, trials reveal your weaknesses. This could be prayer, it can be Bible study, it can be not leaning on each other as much, it could be pride, it could be independence. These are not necessarily sins, but they're weaknesses in our life that can lead to bigger things and that are amplified by trials. David has some of these. His fearing Achish King Gath too much. His lying when he is fearful. These are the type of things that are amplified and that we can see better when we're going through trials and that we can fix. 3, trials reveal character flaws. These can be things like a desire for heaven, control issues, anger, patience. These are things that we can see when we're going through hard times. And that can be fixed through trials. Do you think David encountered this? Do you think he ever got tired of waiting for to become king? Do you think he ever got tired of spears getting thrown at him? Of having to run all day and leave his friends and families? That developed patience and trust in God. And these type of character flaws can be helped through trials. 4, trials can make you question God sometimes. We see this a lot in the Job. And I often wonder if the situation that happened in Job 1 ever happened the same way to David. God ever said, "Satan, did you ever consider my servant David? He's a man after God's own heart." And Satan saying, "Well, yeah, he serves you because you give him the kingdom. You've defeated the Goliath. You've taken all the bears and lions out of his way. But let me take away his family, let me take away his job, let me take his friends, let me take away his country land, and we'll see if he serves God." And you think David ever said, "Why is this happening, God? I've tried to serve you the best I can. Why is this happening?" But don't know. Sometimes we can question God when we're going through hard times. And finally, 5, trials can bring you closer to God than you could ever be without it. When is your prayer life the strongest? When is your Bible study the strongest? When do you feel closer to God than any other time? It's when you are going through the hard times. When did Stephen see Jesus up in heaven? It's when he was being stoned. When did in the fiery furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get help and were closer to God than any other time? It was when they were in the fire itself and a fourth man appeared. It's when you're going through hard times that you're closer to God than anywhere else. Okay. If you will turn to Psalm 34, we'll close everything in and wrap it up. Psalm 34. This is actually a psalm written by David right after he escaped from Achish, the king of Gath. Psalm 34. Verse 1, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall be continually in my heart. My soul makes his boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let his exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look at him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and delivers them. O taste and see the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. O fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lacks no good thing. Come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is there who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are towards the righteous, and his ear towards their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory from the earth. The righteous cry for help, and the Lord hears and delivers them from all their troubles. And the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed spirit. Many are afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. He keeps all his bones, not one of them is broken. Afflictions will slay the wicked, and those who hate righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. I want to make five simple points from this that correspond to the other 5 points. One, over and over again, he says, be righteous. In verse 14, verse 17, verse 19, verse 21, he says, be righteous, don't be wicked. Because if you're wicked, God will not be on your side. Stay righteous. Two, notice in verse 13, when he says, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from deceit. Who was deceitful? Who lied to the priest? Who acted like someone else and deceived people? That was David. He said, never again. Keep yourselves from that. Be righteous. Don't do it. Correct your weakness. Point 3. Over and over and over it says, fear the Lord. In verse 7, verse 9, verse 11. And especially in verse 7, the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, delivers them. If you said that to David, who can harm you if you fear the Lord? While he is before Achish, king of Gath. What do you think his reply would be? Well, Achish, king of Gath, can hurt me if I fear the Lord. Over and over he says, do not fear anyone else but God. Don't fear the man who can only hurt the body. Fear the God that can hurt both the body and the soul. He is the only one you should fear. Fix your character flaws where they may arise. 4. Notice in verse 1, it says, I will bless the Lord always. His praise will be continually on my mouth. My soul makes boast of the Lord, and let the humble hear and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name. I will never question God again. I will bless his Lord continually, even when things are bad. Even things when things are tough. He made me humble, and I understand that the Lord is magnificent, and his name endures forever. And then finally, 5. As David was writing the psalm, alone in the cave, do you think he was closer to God than he was before? Do you think he looked back in his life, and through all this hurt, and through all this pain, he could see that he trusted God more than ever before? He may not known always why, but he's closer now than ever. Rejoice, brethren, when you encounter all various trials. we're fixing to stand, we're fixing to sing, then we'll have a prayer, and then you'll walk through those doors. What's your choice? Do you want the best year of your life? Or do you pick the closest time, closest you'll ever be with the Lord? Your answer is chosen by every day of your life and how you choose to live it. If you're here tonight and you've been going through those tough times, you have great people all around you that can help you. Use them. And if we could pray for you, just let us know, because we're here for you. If you're not walking right with the Lord, you can come forward and be baptized for the remission of your sins. And do that right now as we stand, as we sing.